views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the transformative show, We Carry the Light, with host Dr. Susan Allison, the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. Who are you right now, and who do you want to be? What is it that makes you happy, helps you feel fulfilled, and living your purpose? Tune in and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine. Now, here is your host, Dr. Susan Allison.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to We Carry the Light. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Allison. I hope that you're all having a great week. My week's been full, actually kind of too full, but my highlight has been coming home, kicking off my shoes, and reading Dr. Larry Dossey's new book, One, How Our Individual Mind is Part of a Greater Consciousness and Why It Matters. It's a big book, not just in size, but in terms of its ideas. I think what I love the most is that I already believe everything in it. So I just kept marking pages and turning down corners until the whole book, you know, is all marked up and the pages are all turned down and dog-eared. So, you know, that's how I read, and I love this book. When Dr. Dossey talks about people connecting to a greater consciousness, such as when seeing light and hearing voices, I know what they say is true because I have seen golden light pouring down, and I have heard voices since childhood, and I still do. Am I crazy? No. And neither are the people described in Dossey's book. In his text, he talks even about connections with animals. And I had an amazing experience once with dolphins while diving in Hawaii. I was floating on my back, and I was feeling all of their energy. I was feeling love and peace as I lay there. And then when I sat up, there was a circle of dolphins all around me. And I kind of feel myself tearing up right now. It was such an absolute peak experience of my life when that happened. I've also experienced a twin soul connection with my husband, who passed away in 2013. Describe in my book, Our Spirits Dance. We could sense one another and send messages through the ether when we were not together. And I had a similar connection to my daughter, and it was when I was pregnant with her. The doctor told me I wouldn't deliver for 2 weeks, but during a meditation, I connected deeply with her and knew I would go into labor that night, and I did. In terms of my life now, I've become a songwriter, and all of a sudden, whole songs come into my head, sometimes with complete melody and lyrics, and I call these divine downloads. It's such a gift, and it means I am connected to the one mind. There really is one mind that we're all connected to. In my book to be released in the fall, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, you can learn how to journey to spirit realms and bring back wisdom to change your life now. In his book, Dr. Dossey writes about people who've had near-death experiences and returned to tell us that the spirit world is real, the afterlife is real, and I know it is. Isn't it great to talk about all these deep subjects? I love it. And we're lucky that we have Dr. Dossey here with us today. Dr. Larry Dossey is an internal medicine physician, former chief of staff of Medical City Dallas Hospital, and former co-chairman of the Panel on Mind-Body Interventions, National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, National Institutes of Health. He is executive editor of the peer-reviewed journal Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing. He's the author of 12 books on the role of consciousness and spirituality in health, which have been translated into languages all over the world. His most recent book is One Mind, How Our Individual Mind is Part of a Greater Consciousness and Why It Matters. He lectures around the world. Hi, Larry, and welcome to We Carry the Light.
Hi, Susan. It's great to be back. Thanks for inviting me again.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so glad you're here. Can you tell that I love your book?
Well, it sounds like you read books like I do. People often say they want to loan me a book, and I always refuse because I mutilate books. I turn down pages, and, you know, I sometimes rip pages out. I just want to save them and put them in my files. But thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it coming from you. It really means a lot.
Thank you. No, I loved your book. You know, I always start this way, and I'd love to start with you and your personal journey. Did you always have the belief that you do now that are expressed in this book?
No, actually, I sort of came by this belief that all minds are connected, and in some way they, in some dimension, form a single, what I call one mind. I didn't grow up thinking this at all. As a matter of fact, all through my medical training, I was told that this was absolutely impossible. People who believe this sort of thing needed to be on antipsychotic medications or in therapy or something like that. But over about the past 20 years, my journey has been one of paying attention not only to my own experiences, but the experiences of my patients, nurses, and my professional colleagues. But even more than that, in the past two or three decades, we have had an avalanche of actual scientific evidence suggesting extremely strongly that there, in some dimensions, just are not any barriers or boundaries or limitations to consciousness. And so what has happened in my profession and in much of science is that we are sort of clawing our way toward a new image of consciousness. It isn't going to be like the old one in which we say the brain makes consciousness, and when the brain dies, that's it. Everything that we consider who we are is annihilated with physical death. That is a view that is going to wind up on the rubbish heap of history. And we're looking at a new, beautiful image of consciousness where we say that it works through the body and the brain, and that gives us a sense of individuality. But that's just the start of things. There is every reason to suppose that consciousness does survive bodily death, the death of the brain and body, and that there is a heck of a lot more that lies in store for us after the death of this physical being.
Fascinating. So how do we know that? So, you know, imagine that many of my listeners are quite scientific and quite rational and so on. How do we know? And does this have to do with the whole concept of the mind non-local? And do we have proof of that?
Well, you sort of really are going in the direction that I've gone in the past 20 years. We know this through basically two different lines of evidence. One, we've had forever. That's called people's experiences. As you've already pointed out, for time immemorial, people have had spontaneous experiences and near-death experiences that suggest very strongly that consciousness can act outside the body, even when the body is not functioning, and is close to the verge of death. So that is not, for me, the clincher in this argument. What is a series of experiments that have really gone on for the better part of a century. They number in the tens of thousands now. They have to do in fields where people have come together in laboratories and done formal tests showing decisively that people can communicate at a distance outside the present, even from the other sides of the earth. And this implies very strongly that there is a functioning aspect of consciousness that is not confined to the body. It isn't even confined to the present moment. There have been recently several, and you science people out there listening will know what a meta-analysis is. There have been many meta-analyses now that looked at least five areas of statistical significance in these sorts of studies. And the odds against explaining these by chance is something called 10 to the 54th power against 1. So it would take a long time to go into the specific meaning of this, but what this is saying is that look, these things are real. You can demonstrate them in the laboratory, and you can't say that they happen just by chance. That simply will not do it. We are looking at a revolution in the science surrounding consciousness. Little by little, people who inform themselves of this body of evidence come away suggesting that, yep, this is not fantasy. This doesn't happen to psychotic people. This is real, and you can demonstrate it in the laboratory as it has been done thousands of times. So that's where we stand. We're on a threshold of a new way of scientifically looking at consciousness.
I think it's incredible. And, you know, I am not a scientist. I'm a psychologist, but I, you know, obviously I understood your book, but you know what I love the most, just because of the human interest stories. I loved your stories about people, your stories about animals, and, you know, the question, how do we know the one mind exists, you know, comes up for me right now. But I'd love to hear some stories, some vignettes, examples about people and animals from the book, if you could share some of those for people who aren't as scientific.
Well, one category is called returning animal stories. I've collected a whole bunch of these, and so have a lot of other biologists and ethologists who study animal behavior. One of my favorite stories concerns a well-documented case of Bobby, B-O-B-B-I-E, a collie mix who was traveling with their family who lived in Oregon. They were traveling in Indiana, and Bobby got lost. And as much as they tried to find this animal, they could not. So they traveled on to their home in Oregon, heartbroken, really, because this dog was precious to this family. So several months later, there's a scratch at the door, and Bobby bounds up the stairs to pass when the door was open, bounded up through the house up into the second floor and jumped on the bed of Bobby's owner. This was not a look-alike dog. This dog had tags and identifying marks and scars. So there's no question about the identity of this animal, who had somehow found her way over almost 3,000 miles, almost from one coast to the other.
Wow.
Now, you can say, well, this happened according to chance. I just can't buy that. I mean, the odds against chance of that animal finding the owners all the way across the United States, I think, is just about zero. If you look at this story together with 60 other cases that I've reported on, I think you can picture some sort of communication between animals and the owners who love them and care about them. I'm particularly intrigued by this attitude of love and caring, because this seems to be sort of the thread that runs through so many of these stories, in which not just animals, but people communicate with one another at a great distance. You see these kinds of stories, and for example, people who have close, loving connections. The classic example, I suppose, would be a mother who just knows that her child is in danger and rushes out to pull the child out of the swimming pool and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Those studies are so common, they're not even reported anymore. The point I want to make is that there's something about love and caring and compassion that seems to set the stage for the occurrence of these instances.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the little story I told earlier about when I was pregnant with my daughter, what I didn't share is that she was in danger. And, you know, she needed to be born right away. And I got this message so strongly from her that I was going to go into labor that night. And I had just been to the doctor that morning. And he said, well, you haven't dropped yet. It's going to be 2 more weeks. He was completely wrong. And I was in complete communication with my daughter, who was, in my uterus at the time. So I completely believe those stories. I do.
Well, you know, I think if you had to pick one type of story that could stand as an emblem for all of these others about distant communication between people, it would have to be between a mother and child. This is sort of a template, I think, in which so many of these other kinds of examples rest. I can give you one more example that I talk about in the book. There was a woman who was on the East Coast who had a son who was living on the West Coast, and she hadn't seen him in some time, but they were extremely close emotionally. She was just sitting in her living room and had this experience of seeing a string of numbers just float through in her mind. She had no idea what this was, but then she started looking at them, and they looked sort of like a telephone number. Then she had this impulse to dial this string of numbers, which she did. So the person who answered the phone was a nurse in an emergency room on the other side of the country in the city where her son lived. And this nurse said, "May I help you?" And this woman said, "Well, I don't know. I'm just worried about my son all of a sudden. I can't say why." And she said, "What's your son's name?" So she told the nurse the son's name. And then the nurse said, "Oh, yes, well, he was just admitted to the emergency room about an hour ago. He's been in a car accident, but he's doing fine. Let me put the doctor on the line for you." So the doctor told her that he had just finished taking care of the son. He was injured in the accident, but not seriously, so everything was going to be just fine. There are two instances like that, which I talk about in the book, where these things just pop out of the blue. We've already mentioned one of the features of them. That's the love and the affection that exist between two people. And here you have the pattern of the mother and a child. And you see this running so often through these stories.
No, they do. It really does. You know, one thing that really was an aha for me, and it's back to animals and insects and so on, is your story, all the stories about bees that you had in the book. And I have to tell you that I have a beehive, and my husband was the beekeeper. He passed away in 2013, and twice now my bees have flown away. And until reading your book, I mean, I was just, I actually literally my mouth was open when I was reading the parts in the book that talk about that, real seriously, because I didn't do any kind of ceremony. I didn't, you know, and the suggestion in the book is that I do a ceremony. You know, the hive is up on a roof by an avocado tree that drapes over it. I feel like I need to climb up there and do a ceremony. And I have had bees ordered for spring now, and in the book it says don't buy your bees, and I just had someone offer me a beehive completely out of the blue, and I think I'm going to use that beehive and do a ceremony. So what do you think about that?
Well, I would encourage you to do that. You know, I was fascinated to tap into this lore of bees who really have an attachment to their owner and who sometimes just pick up and leave when the owner dies, unless certain rituals are followed. I'd never heard of this before, but this lore about bees and their owners goes way back centuries in Western Europe and in England. So
I know. It's fascinating.
I'm never surprised about what kind of animals can form these sort of attachments with human beings, but it's very comforting because it suggests that consciousness is not the sole possession of human beings. It extends into the animal kingdom. And so we better be ready for some surprises when we go looking for the attachments of living things with humans.
Really true. You know, I wonder if you could make the connection for us between these incidents where there's telepathy, there's like a psychic connection, there's perhaps clairvoyance, there's all these things happening in terms of our connection to animals and people. But how is that connected to the one mind?
Well, I think the key thing is to learn how to think in a different way. You know, if you think in the traditional ways in which we say consciousness is just limited to the brain and the present, all of these things get categorized as just crazy instances. They can't possibly happen. And we know that because we say assume that consciousness can't act outside the brain and the body. We have to learn to think in a different way. The old way is local thinking, where you think that the mind is localized to the here and now, to the brain. But we have to think in what I term non-local ways of thinking. And that suggests that the mind is not localized to the brain and body, and not even to the present moment. Non-local is just a fancy word for infinite. If there's something about our consciousness that's non-local, it's infinite in time and it's infinite in space. The reason to think in this way is to try to explain what happens to people in terms of their own experiences, as we've been talking about, and also what happens in the laboratory experiments where we put this to the test. We can show that telepathy and clairvoyance and precognition, knowing something that's is going to happen before it actually does, these are not fantasies. These can be documented in very careful laboratory-controlled experiments. And so what we have to do is to learn to think non-locally and not be subjugated and enslaved to this old idea of local thinking. So nobody really knows how this works. You know, non-local is just a term. It doesn't have any explanatory power. But we have to get beyond the idea that this stuff is impossible. And that takes a lot of doing for people in our culture who have been reared and educated that everything operates locally and in what we call a Newtonian way. It just simply doesn't. I think it's really essential that we move in this direction of thinking in a new way, because if we can come to the idea that we're all connected and unitary and allied in some way at the level of consciousness, I think this is going to be really important through the future of our species on the Earth. Because if we do get it in our understanding that we are connected, we're more likely to be willing to make the sacrifices and the changes that are necessary to honor other species on the Earth, because they're united with us. And in that, I suggest, Susan, lies our future as a species on this Earth.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I want to ask you more about that later. But I'm so happy you're talking about, you know, getting out of Newtonian materialism and embracing quantum physics. You know, thank the Lord. You know, it's been here since the 1930s, but people have not accepted it. And I have felt sorry for all the quantum physicists, you know, and have had some of them on my radio shows, because people have not believed that everything is energy in the past. And now we are seeing that everything's energy. And I love this quote that I just heard recently from Alberto Toldo, where he said, energy is densely packed light. And we are densely packed light. And the universe is densely packed light. And, you know, it's one reason I call my show The Light, you know, is that we are energy and everything is energy. And the more we start believing that and connecting in those ways, we get out of this materialism that we've been in for God knows how long, centuries.
Well, to those listeners who may think that, you know, we're just talking about what New Age California hippies think about light and consciousness and all of that, I just want to say, open your minds to some of the messages that have come from some of the most significant scientists of the 20th century. I have an entire chapter in this book, One Mind, dedicated to the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Erwin Schrödinger, who won the Nobel Prize in 1933 for his elaboration on quantum physics. Schrödinger, and the reason I include him in this book, was a huge proponent of the idea of one mind. And that was his term. He said, minds do not exist in the plural. There is, in fact, only one mind. The reason I include some of this physics talk in the book is that I just want people to know that we're not fantasizing this stuff as renegades and traitors to science. This is a solid thread through much of 20th century science. So I just want people to know that they're, some of their greatest exemplars in science have taken this path because, not just from personal experience, but because this is borne out in actual experimentations. So you're right on target by emphasizing the connection here between quantum mechanics. People don't have to go in the direction of quantum mechanics, and certainly some people appear to be threatened by this idea. But it's there for people who want a solid foundation and want some science to back up these ideas.
Right. You know, you mentioned in your book all these, you know, even the CIA was involved in some of these experiments in terms of proving that the mind is non-local and proving that people could predict the future and so forth. Why was the CIA involved in those tests?
Well, the CIA is, as everybody knows, is interested in espionage. And so there was a trend starting back in the 70s to put some of these ideas to work in the field to tap into secrets telepathically that the Russians might have and so on. Actually, this may sound screwy, but in the book I talk about one instance where two people who were skilled in telepathy and clairvoyance in a field we call remote viewing actually were able to pinpoint the location of a downed Russian bomber and the in equatorial Africa when not even spy satellites could find it. And so this is just one example about how the security agencies in the United States felt that this was something that could be of immense security value for the nation. I want to mention that about a year ago, I was invited to attend and participate in a meeting out in California at one of the University of California campuses that was sponsored by the National Academy of Sciences. You know, they don't bite off things that don't have scientific respectability. This organization is made up by the elite scientists in this country. The topic of this conference, to which about 40 people were invited, was non-local mind.
Wow.
So I just want our listeners to know that
wow.
This is evidence, once again, of the extreme respectability of this this way of thinking and this body of evidence. If
wow,
the National Academy of Sciences can get behind
yep.
this, then I think it's time for the rest of us to listen up.
Absolutely right. And I love that. It is time for us to take a break, but we'll be right back with Dr. Larry Dossey.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Join the Pacific Northwest EFT Tappers at the 5th Annual Tappers Gathering, March 14th at Bastyr University, and have a chance to meet EFT founder Gary Craig. This event raises money for continuing EFT tapping scientific research. Bring your cards and information for a full day of networking and inspiration. Visit www.nwtappersgathering.com or call 360-661-6877.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.
Welcome back, everyone, to We Carry the Light. I'm Dr. Susan Allison, and my guest is Dr. Larry Dossey, who's been on my show before, and I'm so happy to have him back. And we're talking about his newest book, One Mind. So, Larry, you talked a little bit about why accessing one mind at this time is so important for humanity and for our planet. And I'm wondering if you could say just a little more about that.
Well, I think we face some challenges that are actually of life and death importance as human beings on this planet. I mean, yeah, I think you would have to be unconscious not to know about the problems that we face with global climate change and environmental degradation of all sorts, overpopulation, hunger, food insecurity, water scarcity. This is a very long list.
Yeah.
I think that one reason we face these problems is because we have become obsessed with the cult of individuality and in the Western world in particular. And I think this has led to an epidemic of selfishness and greed, which, if we do not solve this problem, is going to really bode very poorly for our existence as a species. I think one of the major tools that can help us out of these predicaments is to identify not solely with individuality and selfishness and the greed that it leads to, but to a sense that we are united and interconnected, not just with one another as human beings, but with all living systems on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that this is going, unless we are able to make this kind of leap, we are in serious trouble. I keep coming back to a comment that the author Alice Walker made when she said, anything we love can be saved.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we better figure out ways that we can identify with the rest of sentient beings and all living systems on Earth so we can dig deep and find the caring and the love that makes it possible to change our behaviors. Because if we don't do this, I think we're not going to make it as a species. And I don't think that's doomsday talking. There are a lot of scientists who are convinced of this also. So I think this one mind idea really is a very important path for us to consider. And it's, I think, so easy to do it if we open our minds up to the evidence that this is just the way things operate. You know, the whole environmental movement in the 20th century is built upon the essential idea of interconnectedness.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot secede from nature. I mean, if environmentalism has taught us anything, it's that. And I think that idea is very compatible with this notion of the one mind. So that's basically why I think that this plays into our life and death issues as a species.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. Gee, if we only could have learned, you know, from the indigenous peoples of the world before we're on the brink of disaster here, since, you know, I have studied Native American teachings for years. I've done 3 vision quests. You know, I just love, you know, their connection to the earth and believing that nothing is separate and that it all is one. And it's it would bode well for us actually to go back and look at what indigenous people have been telling us for eons.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Native Americans, because just yesterday I received an astonishing email from a Native American who was in Washington lobbying on behalf of his Native American tribe, and he had a spontaneous epiphany while walking from the White House area back to his hotel, in which everything seemed to be totally transformed. This is what I call the one-mind experience. It's an epiphany. But it happened to this Native American because he said he believed that his whole life as a Native American had led up to this moment.
Mm.
And this was where he felt everything was just suffused with an ethereal light, that everything around him was part of a perfectly functioning system, that everyone that he met on the street knew that they were part of this beautiful, perfect, integrated whole. And he said, this was what my life was leading up to. And so, you know, this gets into the question of how we access this knowledge of the one mind. And for this man, you don't do anything. It does you. And I think there's a hugely important lesson here. A lot of people really spend a lot of energy, I think uselessly, figuring out how they can make this happen in their life. And I think there's an unannounced, and so this is part of who we are, and it isn't something that has to be manufactured. You know, no assembly is required here. And we just simply have to figure out ways to get the conscious mind and the ego out of the way. And when that occurs, then magic can happen. There are, of course, a lot of ways that we can do to make this happen. But for this young man, this just happened as a blessing and as a grace in what we call an epiphany.
Yes. No, it's happened to me where I had golden light pouring out of the sky one time at night when I was driving, another time when I was in bed pregnant with one of my children. Golden light came through down from the ceiling. And both times I had a question. I was at a turning point in my life and really needed help. And both times this golden light appeared. And I also heard voices. I'm clairaudient, so I hear voices that come out of the light. But you're right. There are things that we can do, not to force it, but there are things that we can do that would help us access the one mind. You mentioned meditation in the book. And I would like to say that shamanic journey work also accesses the one mind.
Well, meditation or some sort of contemplative discipline where we simply sit down, become quiet, and let things well up from a deeper source of knowing has been a time-honored way of entering this awareness in the history of the human race. You know, also, people these days often describe near-death experiences. There have been 15 million Americans by now who have described this sort of awareness. And the hallmark of near-death experience is this sense of oneness with everything, being united with all there is. And that's usually accompanied by intense joy and a sense of fulfillment. You know, I think we ought to recognize, too, that some people just seem to be born with this awareness. I'll bet you have known people who just seem to enter the life as humans, as an old soul. You know, they don't need any more teaching. They seem to be blessed with this awareness. I think athletics gives us a few lessons, and I've known some great athletes who talk about being in the zone in athletic performances where you can do nothing wrong, where everything just happens precisely the way you want it to. And this can be a transformative experience for people who experience this deeply.
Yes.
I've also spent years talking to people who are telepathic and clairvoyant or who are precognitive. And it is often the case that after one of these whopper type experiences, these people feel that they have entered a space of knowing that is transformative and transcendent. So I think these so-called paranormal experiences, which can just come out of the blue, can also be a strong avenue and journey toward this one mind type of awareness. But I'll be a little personal here. One of the things that's worked in my life beautifully has been exposure to wilderness, to deep nature. For decades, my wife Barbara and I have managed to arrange our lives so that we take several weeks in the summer off, and we disappear into dense wilderness, remote areas somewhere in the Rocky Mountains, usually in Idaho or Wyoming, and just live in isolation for 2 to 3 weeks. This is a powerful experience for us, and I can't imagine my life working well without periodic exposure to nature in this way. Mm-hmm. So, Susan, if you add all these things up, I mean, I just think it's kind of hard not to stumble into this awareness, you know,
exactly.
At some point in your life, right?
Exactly.
And so we just need to be open to it and set an intention that says something like, look, I'm ready for this, and I'm ready for it to announce itself to me in my life, and do everything we can to set the stage for that through these various methods.
I agree, and it needs to be a priority, though, because if you look around, have you ever been to a restaurant and there are couples there and they're both on their smartphones, or, you know, teenagers are running around with their smartphones and they aren't talking to each other, or they're on their tablet or their iPad? Do you think that this kind of technology keeps us from being able to access the one mind?
I think there's no question about it. You know, and I'm so sympathetic with these kids, especially, who seem to want to be on their smartphones and electronically connected because they want to escape isolation and aloneness.
Yeah.
But then now there's considerable experimentation that shows that the more kids are on their smartphones, the more lonely they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the explanation by many psychiatrists and psychologists who have looked at this is that what they wind up doing is substituting electronic time with other people in place of FaceTime with them. And it's not the same. So what people are doing, unknown to themselves, is actually making themselves more isolated and cut off from their friends than if smartphones didn't even exist. I think this is a huge problem in our culture.
Me too. I see it constantly, and I'm a therapist, and so these people are also coming to me feeling separate, feeling alone, feeling depressed. And it's because we're not connected with one another in a really deep and meaningful way, person to person, nor are we connecting to everything that is. As you described, being out in nature, you can't help but feel the beauty and the solitude and the amazing connection with everything around you, and the same when meditating, or the same when being with loved ones. And so you're right. It concerns me how technology has taken over people's lives.
You know, I'm a fan of someone you may have bumped into before she died this past year, the psychologist Angelus Arian.
Mm-hmm.
And Angie had what she called four rules of life. And according to these four rules, which had to do with spiritual maturation and psychological advancement, she said the first one was turn off your cell phone. Number two was show up and pay attention. The third was tell the truth. And then the fourth rule of life was just don't be attached to results. At some point, just let it go and let spirit have its way. And so I think there's a lot of wisdom here. She sort of bypassed this idea of active effort, of making something happen. And basically she was saying, get out of your rational mind. Sit down, be quiet, tell the truth, and don't be attached to results. You can't do any of that unless you turn your smartphone off.
It's so true. It's so true. I have a friend who commutes, and I keep telling her to turn off her radio, turn off her music, turn off everything she's listening to, because she wants more connection with the one mind, or connection to all that is. And I've suggested to her that she have more silence. And I think a lot of times people are afraid of silence, is what I'm noticing.
Oh, I think that's true. In my medical office, once we we had our suites and our offices wired for intercommunication, and the salesman who came out to do the deal was horrified that we did not have Muzak all through the office. He, in his major pitch to our group of doctors, he said, "Gentlemen, let me tell you the worst thing in the world." And we were all sitting on our seats wondering what the worst thing in the world was. And he said, "The worst thing in the world is silence. This was his major pitch to put in the speakers overhead and drown out any silence in the office with music.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't bite on his presentation, by the way.
Oh, good. I'm glad you didn't. so glad you didn't. Something else is coming up for me to ask you, which is about the benefits to people, the healing benefits or other benefits that people can expect if they believe in and tune into the one mind.
Well, I'm not saying you should bite off the idea or accept the idea of the one mind on account of these benefits, mm-hmm. but they are very real anyway. And
yeah.
One has to do with health. Nature did not design us to be alone. And we know now from hundreds of studies that people who have rich social interaction and connections and who feel united and one with others simply are healthier than people who don't feel that way. They have a lower incidence of all the major diseases, such as heart disease and cancer, and they have greater longevity. The other benefit, major benefit from participation of the sense of oneness and unity we're calling the one mind is that people are more creative and they are wiser if they spend time in this awareness. In the book, I talk of a string of creative people that are famous artists and musicians and so on. And one of my favorite is the great American inventor, Thomas Edison, who gave us the phonograph and the moving pictures and the electric light bulb and so on. Edison, quote in the book, said, people say that I've created things. He said, I've never created anything. He said, I get ideas from the universe. He said, ideas come to me from the outside. And I'm fascinated by this because here's a deeply spiritual man who was not honored for this side of who he was. People now have defined him as just really clever, right? And he came up with all these ideas through ordinary logical processes, but he said this was not the way it worked for him.
Nope.
And so this is often how the one mind presents itself in people's lives. And
that's right.
Wisdom is part of the bargain here. Greater creativity is one of the side benefits of staying or participating in this way of being.
You know, it's so true. I loved what you said earlier, too, and it sounds like Edison did, which he got out of his own way. He got out of his rational mind. He just allowed it to kind of pour through. And that's what I've found with this songwriting that's been happening, is that it happens when I'm least expecting it, when I'm not in my rational mind. I'm walking on a beach looking for shells. I'm driving in my car, and it's silent in the car as I'm driving. You know, something happens. I'm on my bike. I'm in the shower. Who knows? My rational mind is not in charge. And that's when these what I call them divine downloads, that's when they pour in.
Well, you know, getting back to Edison and the idea of silence, there's a lesson, I think, in Edison's life. He was extraordinarily deaf. He spent his quiet time in silence as part of the deafness. And so I cannot but believe that this was, in a very definite way, part of his creativity. He was naturally silent because he couldn't hear. I'm not a proponent of that, but God knows deafness is a terrible price to pay, but at least it made it possible for him to be very often in a world of silence.
And I feel like that's when we connect sometimes the most with a greater consciousness and with creativity and so on, is when we're silent. I do have a question that we could talk about forever, but I want to just ask it anyway, which is the one mind God?
You know, this has come up time and time again, and I think there are many qualities that apply to the divine, the absolute, the God, goddess, Allah, as applied to the one mind, in terms of infinitude and space and time. We say that the absolute or God is infinite in space and time. These are qualities that are also possessed by the one mind, which is non-local or infinite in space and time. But there are profound differences. And I would never say that our one mind is the same thing as the Almighty or the Absolute. There are huge differences in terms of power and significance. You know, the relationship has often been described as the relationship between the wave and the ocean. The wave is certainly identical to the ocean in terms of composition, but not in terms of power and extent and that sort of thing. A drop of ocean water is the same as the entire ocean, but certainly different in terms of power and significance. So although I would say that we do share qualities and characteristics with the absolute by way of the one mind, they're certainly not identical.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that the wave is the one mind and the ocean is God? Or are you saying that we are drops of water in this ocean?
Well, I think works both ways.
Yeah, both.
And I think we're a part of the whole. But in terms of significance and power, I think there are fundamental differences. But this should not prevent us from honoring the what has always been called the divine within, our inner divinity. Mm-hmm. Because I think the one mind affirms that we share qualities with the absolute, with God, goddess, and so on.
I completely agree. And you do talk in the book about, you know, people saying to you that isn't it kind of dangerous? You know, are people going to think that they can become God and so on? And I don't think you're intending that at all when you write about it.
No, but I think that there's a theoretical danger. You know, the ego is a slippery sort of thing, and people can use these sorts of comparisons between ourselves and the absolute and what we call in psychology inflate the ego to horrible proportions. And so this leads to psychopathology and egomania and selfishness and greed and so on. So I think we need to keep our foot on the ground about this.
I do too. I'm glad we're talking about that. So, Larry, we're coming towards the end of the show, so I really want you to tell listeners how to get your book and how to learn your work.
Well, it's pretty simple. My website is LarryDawseyMD.com. There's a benefit there. You can order chapter one of this book for free, and there's contact information there as well. So that's the simplest way for us to be in contact, although
wonderful.
By virtue of the one mind, we're still in contact, even though you go to my website or not.
Maybe even more after this show, we'll be in contact with you. Hopefully it's not going to crowd your brain or crowd your mind too much to have us all in contact with you. So is there anything final you would like to say? Just one sentence.
Just a few little lines here. This is a great poem. 14th century Hafiz, the great poet. Let's go deeper. For if we do, our spirits will embrace and interweave. Our union will be so glorious that even God will not be able to tell us apart.
Oh, beautiful. I love it. Thank you so much, Larry, for being on the show, and I'm definitely going to invite you back.
Thanks, Susan. Let's do it.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And I also appreciate all of you, my wonderful listeners, for being here and for being who you are in the world. Next week, we have Wendy Gale, psychic and channel, who has an amazing relationship with the Archangel Metatron. I want you to call in to the show, and she'll do a short reading for you. Until then, remember that you carry the light.
You've been listening to the transformative show, We Carry the Light, with host Dr. Susan Allison, the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. Who are you right now, and who do you want to be? What is it that makes you happy, helps you feel fulfilled, and living your purpose? Tune in every Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in each Tuesday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected with Dr. Julie Kroll, featuring weekly segments with David Eisen and the Chakra Sound System. Each week, you will journey through infinite possibilities, expanding to social potential, and find beautiful beginnings where endings leave off. Change makers from around the world will explore what's emergent about the environment, relationships, health, and the evolution of consciousness. Visit thedrjulieshow.com.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Join the Pacific Northwest EFT Tappers at the 5th Annual Tappers Gathering, March 14th at Bastyr University, and have a chance to meet EFT founder Gary Craig. This event raises money for continuing EFT tapping scientific research. Bring your cards and information for a full day of networking and inspiration. Visit www.nwtappersgathering.com or call 360-661-6877.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Tune in each week to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher on TransformationTalkRadio.com, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Tune in and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information.
Naturopathic doctor, founder of the Martha's Vineyard Holistic Retreat, and author of the New York Times bestseller 21 Pounds in 21 Days, Dr. Ronnie DeLuce has helped tens of thousands of people, including celebrities and athletes, with her message of lifestyle change. Now Dr. Ronnie DeLuce wants to help you. You too can be saved. Email Dr. Ronnie DeLuce at info@ronniedeluceonradio.com and visit mvholisticretreat.com. Dr. Ronnie DeLuce, your partner in wellness.